welcome to Friday. Glad you could make it. Stick around for a while tonight. We will do everything in our power to entertain you. Later on tonight, we'll bring out some Christians and Lions and see how that works out. Thanks to everybody who has sent birthday wishes. I appreciate it very much. I couldn't possibly write to everybody back, although I should. It's rather arrogant not to, but thank you. I really appreciate it. This hour is sponsored by Giovanna. And she writes, "Happy birthday, Mike. Thank you for all you do and for helping us two seekers spend an evening around the campfire. You make the fire, we'll keep it lit. May we all celebrate many birthdays. Love, Giovanna." Ooh. All right. Thank you, Giovanna. Thank you very much. Joe and Madison wrote, happy birthday. Oh, and then there's that other birthday to celebrate this weekend, the 4th of July. Yes, this is the day where we get to celebrate all our wonderful freedoms, such as the freedom to work at Walmart because so many of our good jobs have been shipped overseas, the freedom for big corporations to pollute all they want, the freedom to have so many of your tax dollars go to the war profiteering industry, the freedom to have a two-party system where we get to choose between the lesser of two evil corporate-controlled political parties, the freedom for big corporations to not pay any taxes, the freedom to be one of the millions of Americans without health insurance, and the freedom to have a major media that keeps people ignorant and brainwashed. Well, Joe, that's a little cynical. It's also very true. Terry, who lives in Hudson, Canada, says, "Last Monday..." Parenthetically, I'm behind on my podcast. "Last Monday, you talked about the Supreme Court's ruling, which allows minors to buy video games, violent video games. Of course, they had to allow those games, as the military-industrial complex continually needs fresh meat for their war machine. Violent, desensitizing video games for children provide a steady supply of eager, preconditioned, conscienceless killers." And then he includes a lengthy article from, is it Foreign Policy? That talks about just that. Yeah, of course. You know, let the little boogers spend all the time they want with the killing, the mayhem, the explosions, the bombs, the death, the heads blown off. You're creating the future of America. I guess everybody heard that Dominique Strauss-Kahn has been released, former IMF leader, walked out of court without bail, free from house arrest today, after prosecutors acknowledged there were questions about the credibility of the hotel housekeeper who accused him of sexual assault. The charges, which include attempted rape, the charges have not been reduced, but... the prosecutors are signaling that they do not believe the accusations are as ironclad as they once seemed. Well, they must believe that the accusations are baseless. I mean, it's one thing to reduce a bond from $6 million and house confinement down to something else, but to completely remove the bond. And the only thing that they're holding on Strauss-Kahn is his passport. Interesting how this case is developed. Do you know the details? Huh? Apparently, the information that she filed for asylum in this country was... either flawed or complete fraud. She was not raped in her home country of Guinea. She has had, according to information put out there by the prosecutor's office, or leaked by the prosecutor's office, the office that was going to prosecute Strauss-Kahn, she had made... phone calls that were recorded with somebody in jail where she discussed whether or not she should come up with a case against this guy, Strauss-Kahn. Thousands upon thousands of dollars have been deposited into an account, I believe, in her name. I believe I have this right. What else? She's had lengthy conversations with what are referred to as international drug dealers. Jesus, God. Now, remember, Strauss-Kahn's attorney said at the beginning, the story is not what it appears to be. I was listening to The World on NPR today, and apparently in France, it's been nothing but the subject of discussion ever since the court decided yesterday to release Strauss-Kahn after what he had gone through. Now, this doesn't remove any of the accusations by people in Europe, by women in France, who have claimed that his behavior toward them was inappropriate. If I can use that word, I don't know what it was. You know, what constitutes inappropriate? Sometimes inappropriate. I was taught that if you're driving down the street and you beep your horn at a woman, that's inappropriate. So what are they referring to? When touching, suggestions, invitations, I don't know. But the way I got the story from NPR, or from The World, PRI, WGBH in Boston, the prosecutors, when they looked at the charges as brought by this housekeeper, and they realized that Strauss-Kahn was at the airport on his way back to France, and we do not have an extradition treaty with France. Rather than investigate the crime, if one occurred, they more or less took the woman at her exact word that she had been sexually assaulted and all the details that went with that. And based on that, they got an arrest warrant and, you know, the rest. You know, brought him in chains or cuffs or whatever from his flight. Perp walked him in front of the global media. And at the time he's arrested, remember the conversation? Some of it showed up on this program as to whether or not this was an attempt to sabotage his potential run for the presidency of France against Sarkozy coming up next year. Whether or not his attitudes were a concern, the International Monetary Fund, and his attitudes, is my understanding, were not directly in keeping with the global capitalists who are determined to devour anything they can get their hands on. So Strauss-Kahn, apparently, the backstory was his threat as a politician to the established global capitalist neoliberal order. He was not quite owned outright by the global capitalists. So what to do, what to do? Now, just like Eliot Spitzer, who was about to bring the hammer down on banksters in New York, all of a sudden, the personal, if I can use that adjective, and I probably shouldn't, the personal aspects of his life, both these men came out. Spitzer, hiring a sex worker. Sarkozy, Strauss-Kahn, his inability to keep his pants zipped. Now, again, if there was sexual assault involved, that's a whole different story. But to start from the proposition that it did occur and he must be treated the way he was treated, that's a whole different kettle of fish, right? 21 past the hour. At Op-Ed News, there's a piece up by Paul Craig Roberts, who was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury in the Reagan administration, also former Wall Street Journal editor. His article says prosecutors back off from their, quote, ironclad case, end quote, against Strauss-Kahn. And Sheila writes, who sent this to me, isn't it strange that this fell apart on the very next day after the woman was confirmed as IMF president? Anyway, Paul Craig Roberts writes that the New York prosecutors had to tell the judge that the police and prosecutors have lost confidence in their sexual assault case against Dominique Strauss-Kahn. The judge has released him from house arrest, returned his bail and bond money. The prosecutors now say that the immigrant hotel maid lied to the police about the incident and about other things, and the police have revealed that the victim, quote, quote, discussed with an imprisoned man the possibility of turning the case into extortion. According to the New York Times, the maid's jailed confidant was among a number of people who had made multiple cash deposits totaling $100,000 to the maid's bank account. The police now suspect that she has connections to illegal drugs and money laundering. The prosecutor says he will continue to investigate the case. What that means, according to Paul Craig Roberts, is that the prosecutor, a politically ambitious Cy Vance Jr., is going for a misdemeanor plea from Strauss-Kahn to save the prosecutor's face from being injudiciously drawn into an extortion reputation-destroying plot against the man who French polls indicated was the public's favorite in the upcoming French presidential election, in which President Sarkozy, Washington's puppet, is seeking re-election. Ooh. Paul Craig Roberts goes on, the prosecutor is sending Strauss-Kahn's legal team the message that the case is being kept open and could be reinstated unless Strauss-Kahn's attorneys secure his permission to negotiate a deal on a minor charge, which essentially has no punishment, but saves the faces of the New York prosecutors and police. And then Paul Craig Roberts makes a very strong sentence here. He says, we will probably never know whether the maid thought the scheme up on her own or whether it came from Sarkozy's operatives and their U.S. allies. Good God. One indication that Strauss-Kahn's political enemies are implicated is the fact, made public by the French press, that Sarkozy's political team in France knew about Strauss-Kahn's arrest before the New York police announced it. This fact did not stop the New York prosecutor and police from painting Strauss-Kahn as guilty in numerous public statements and in unethical, if not illegal, leaks to reporters. He goes on numerous internet sites, I pointed out the problems with the case against Strauss-Kahn. For informing people of the obvious, I was denounced by the right wing and the left wing. The right wing gave me the finger for doubting the word and integrity of police and prosecutors. Didn't I know that these are the honorable guardians who protect the public from crime? How dare I question anything the police or prosecutors did or do? What was I, some kind of pinko liberal commie? The left wing also gave me the finger and said that I had revealed my real self as nothing but an apologist for the rich and powerful and for men who seduce women. How much was I paid for my service to the rich and powerful and seducers of innocent women? The feminist left denounced me as a misogynist. Only a woman-hater could take the sign of a rapist against his victim. It is also tiresome to endure the stupidity of people. Little wonder they are losing their liberty, their jobs, their incomes, and their country, their self-respect. With Strauss-Kahn's reputation in tatters, and having been knocked out of the French presidential election and removed from the IMF, where he was beginning to raise questions about the establishment's use of the IMF to bail out rich bankers on the backs of poor peasants, the so-called justice system has done its work. It is now safer for the authorities to release him than to risk a trial. The shrill bleating of the maid's legal team signifies their agony of having lost their share of the hope to be extorted millions now that a monetary settlement would clearly indicate obstruction of justice and prison for them all. Well, there's more here, but Paul Craig Roberts, writing at opednews.com, former Reagan administration Assistant Secretary of the Treasury and former editor of the Wall Street Journal. Did you know that Minnesota is shutting down? No, seriously. And this is a holiday weekend. The 74 state parks in the state of Minnesota this weekend will all be closed. We'll be right back.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malone.
Before the hour. Yeah, all 74 state parks in Minnesota closed this weekend. Well, Giovanna is sponsoring this hour. She writes, "Happy birthday, Mike. Thank you for all you do and for helping us truth seekers spend an evening around the campfire. You make the fire. We'll keep it lit. May we all celebrate many birthdays. Love, Giovanna." Oh, I like that. Thank you, Giovanna. By the way, Giovanna has sponsored the entire program tonight, just like Duck and Over did last night. You guys are great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Giovanna. Minnesota state government, this is the way it's reported by the Associated Press. Minnesota state government has shut down after political leaders couldn't agree on how to solve a $5 billion budget deficit. The talks between Democratic Governor Mark Dayton and the neo-Nazi Republicans in that state, the talks fell apart. Dayton had demanded tax increases on top earners. The Republicans said no. Parks are being padlocked, rest areas. The bars are coming down. The full impact hit today with thousands of state employees told to go home. A wide array of services suspended. And any hope of a last-minute budget deal between Governor Mark Dayton and the neo-fascists who control the legislative branch evaporated around 10 p.m. last night when Dayton appeared to say he and Republicans were still divided over how much the state should spend the next 2 years and that he saw no chance of avoiding a shutdown. Dayton said, quote, "It's significant that the shutdown will begin on the 4th of July weekend. On that date, of course, we celebrate our independence. It also reminds us there are causes and struggles worth fighting for," end quote. Republicans appeared after Governor Dayton made a statement and tried to blame him. They said that that the two sides were closer than he admitted, which is a lie. They criticized his refusal to call a special session so lawmakers could pass what they were calling a lights-on budget, just enough money to keep the government running. Dayton refused, saying he's been clear for months that he would only agree to a total budget approach. The shutdown is forcing thousands of layoffs. Road projects are coming to a standstill. State parks are closed. The effects were already being felt yesterday as people rushed to get drivers and fishing licenses, and park officials began warning campers to pack their gear and leave. Republican State Senator Michelle Benson said earlier in the day she wasn't budging, a position that Republican leaders held to even after it became clear the shutdown was coming. Now, of course, this is just a precursor of what's taking shape in Washington between Barack Obama and the Republicans. According to the AP, the stoppage will halt non-emergency road construction, shut the state zoo and capitol, stop child care assistance for the poor. More than 40 state boards and state agencies are going dark. A small group of protesters paraded before reporters clustered outside Governor Dayton's office yesterday afternoon, chanting and waving signs to support the governor's position. They yelled, "You say cut back, we say fight back, cut back, fight back. You say cut back, we say fight back." I agree with that. One woman carried a handmade sign that read, "Governor Dayton, don't back down." Dayton had proposed raising taxes on couples earning more than $300,000 and on individuals making more than $180,000. Republicans said no, arguing instead that there had to be spending cuts, including reductions in health and welfare spending that Governor Dayton said he would not accept. Okay. Well, how does it feel, Minnesota? Not only is your state closed, but you have a psychopathic, crazy person out there, Michelle Bachmann, huh? Running around like her hair's on fire. Prairie 2 writes, the U.S. dollar has been relatively stable for the past 2 days, although still relatively weak against the euro. Oil has started to come down again, so is gold, which is below 1,500 an ounce, and the interest on U.S. treasuries is still edging up. This combination indicates traders aren't expecting any big crisis soon. Indeed, with the looting of Greece going so well, there will be booty for everyone. Another influential investment manager has come out in favor of reviving the New Deal. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Barton Biggs, managing partner at multi-billion dollar hedge fund Traxys Partners, and formerly the chief global strategist at Morgan Stanley, said only huge government intervention is likely to fix things. You would like to see massive infrastructure projects like the WPA to compete with what is being done in China. He's right, of course, and it would take $3 trillion just to do all the maintenance and replacement of bridges, dams, and such that have been neglected over the past 30 years. It's been almost 4 years since the I-35 bridge collapse in Minneapolis that killed 13 and injured 100 people. And Republicans act the same today as they did before it happened. The morning of the collapse, Republicans bragged about upholding Governor Tim Pawlenty's veto of a bridge repair bill, the same as they had done year after year. And today the state of Minnesota has closed for lack of money. That's right, they are closed. Pawlenty brags that he balanced the budget for 8 years straight, and we know how he did that, don't we? Besides neglecting bridges and letting Medicaid patients die, he shifted massive amounts of spending to local governments and juggled the books to leave a $5 billion shortfall behind. The current governor, who's a Democrat, won't back down to the Republican legislature. They won't give up the tax cuts they gave corporations and the rich, of course, and so the state of Minnesota is closed. In neighboring Wisconsin, the Republicans are completely in control and have instituted massive cuts and imposed them on local government, which isn't allowed to raise their own taxes to make it up. Republicans are doing this in every state they control, even refusing federal money for infrastructure projects. Some are even cutting unemployment benefits and Medicaid coverage by refusing the federal money to pay for it. Republicans at the state levels are not limiting themselves to tanking the economy and letting the sick go untreated. They're passing bills designed to severely restrict voter turnout, with ID requirements and voting procedures to make it easy for Republican poll watchers to simply deny access to the polls. They're also streamlining, quote, the administration of elections to ensure Republican officials can make voting as difficult as possible in Democratic precincts. And they're engaging in creative election rigging if their other efforts aren't enough to keep the outraged electorate from voting them all out of office. Throw in more concealed gun carry laws, union busting, cuts to Medicaid, massive giveaways of public assets to their cronies, tax breaks for the rich, and it's Christmas in July for the Republicans. It's no wonder they're trying to rewrite the history of the 1700s. We threw these guys out back then. PrairieNumeral2.com. You know, the restrictions being placed. Yeah, I had to get a, I have a photo ID, obviously, my driver's license, but that I have to show now when I go to vote. But I'm waiting for the day. I don't mean to sound all hairy and weird to you here, but I'm waiting for the day for some son of a bitch to come up to me as I'm about to vote and challenge my registration. It is at that point that I will no longer be on this program because I will be in jail. I will. Oh, no, I'm not going to, you know, pull out my gun and shoot him, but there will be an ass beating, and I don't care how big he is, I don't care what color he is, I don't care if he's gay, straight, Jew, Gentile, it makes no difference to me. Somebody challenges me at a poll, even though I know that here in Georgia, my vote really doesn't mean anything. It's just the attitude of these sons of bitches, these Republicans, these right-wingers, who think they can stand at polling places and intimidate people. And they have done it, and they've done it successfully. But I guess I'm just, that's one of the lines in the sand that I draw. So if you want to get me off the air permanently and forever, just get yourself appointed as a poll watcher. Come to my precinct and try to interfere with my right to vote. That'll be the end of that story. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Moore.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Giovanna. Giovanna writes, "Happy birthday, Mike. Thank you for all you do and for helping us truth seekers spend an evening around the campfire. You make the fire. We'll keep it lit. May we all celebrate many birthdays. Love, Giovanna." Thank you, Giovanna. And she has also sponsored the next hour and the one after that. All right, the phones are open, 877-996-2556. Scott is in Minneapolis. Hello, Scott.
Good evening, Mike, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. What's it like being in Minnesota tonight?
Well, it's actually thunderstorming. it's quite biblical here in more ways than one, let me tell you. I just wanted to mention that there were a couple poison pills in the budget negotiations that Governor Dayton refused to back down on. One was the voter ID thing,
right?
Restrictions on abortion,
Right.
And a 10-year 15% cut in state employees, which, of course, is, you know, union. So it's kind of more of the same, all of Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, Florida.
Right.
There was a big rally Thursday and today at the Capitol, and Minnesota and Wisconsin are kind of the birthplaces of the organized labor movement, and mm-hmm. we're not going to go quietly. And with someone like Governor Dayton, I think we've got a real fighting chance, because he's not going to kowtow.
How long? Excuse me. How long can the residents of Minnesota though put up with? With a essentially closed down state, except for emergency police and medical services?
Well, Governor Dayton has urged the Republicans to go back home to their districts and have town hall meetings and see what kind of a reception they get.
Oh, okay.
Not many people know this. Congressman Kravac, Jim Oberstar, he had a town hall meeting, and his own dad gave him the dickens for voting on the Ryan budget and the kill Medicare thing. So, that might take hitting close to home to for some of these yahoos to get it.
Mm.
So, we're patient people, but we'll give them an earful, to be sure. And I think things are going to go the governor's way. Enough is enough.
Well, I hope that happens, but the voters, at least as far as the tallies indicated, you never know with these voting machines. I don't know what you all use up there, but here in Georgia, we use electronic voting, so nobody ever knows who wins. The candidate who wins is the one that the people who own the voting machines want to win. But if in Minnesota your voting system is a little less corrupt, or not corrupt at all, as it is here in Georgia, how do you suppose the majority of voters who sent these people, these Republicans, to public office, how do you suppose they feel at this point?
Well, I think there's going to be some buyer's remorse. I live in a suburb of Minneapolis, and we've used the EMS machines, which I think are Hagel's company, Chuck Hagel's company.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, when the voting discrepancies were happening in 2000 and 2004 and so on, Minnesota leads the country, and I think has every year since 72 in voter turnout. We're very in presidential elections. We are very, very civically minded and dutiful.
Uh-huh.
There was a big snafu with the Frank and Coleman results,
right.
I think they did find a couple of felons who had voted. And in that Senate election, unfortunately, they had voted for Coleman, the Republican.
So, yeah, I remember that. Right. Yeah, it's never voter fraud. It's always election fraud.
Mm.
There's a big difference.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, or registration fraud, which is how they killed Acorn.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouse can register to vote, but, as long as Mickey Mouse doesn't show up at the polls, no harm, no foul.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. So, but hey, you have a safe weekend and a good holiday.
Well, thanks, Scott.
And the little one, and take care.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Scott. Back at you. Thank you for checking in. Thanks a lot, Scott. Our affiliate, KTNF, Janet Roberts, who owns that station, who over the years has, we don't hang out together, but she's shown that she is a friend of this program, a very definite friend of this program. She's the owner of KTNF, she and her husband, and I wish she were listening tonight. She could. Do they carry us live, Kathy? Do they? I wish you were. If you are listening, Janet, I would love to hear from you. But Janet and her husband, her whole family, have been very active in Minnesota politics. In not so much in running for elective office or anything like that, but allowing her radio station to be a voice of reason and progressive politics in Minneapolis-St. Paul, and as far as their signal carries, She's one of the station owners who a couple times has said, well, do you have to cuss so much? I've said, Janet, I'm sorry. I really am. But she's been very, very patient with us and very supportive of this program. And for that, we're eternally grateful. But it would be great to hear from Janet, Janet Roberts, if she's listening tonight. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue with your calls and also some other topics I want to feed into the program here. The number is 996-2556 if you want to give us a call and get online and chat. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. One is sponsored by Giovanna. She writes, happy birthday, Mike. Thank you for all you do and for helping us two seekers spend an evening around the campfire. You make the fire. We'll keep it lit. May we all celebrate many birthdays. Love, Giovanna. Thank you, Giovanna, very much. It's very kind of you. Oh, my goodness. Look who's here. Ask and ye shall receive. It's Janet Roberts, the owner of KTNF in Minneapolis. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Mike.
I didn't know if you were listening or not.
Well, it's so exciting. It's your birthday. And you know, Mike, Bill and I, my husband, want to wish you the happiest birthday in the world, because when we tune in to you, we know every night we're going to get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, even if you're not going to swear on a Bible.
Well, thanks, Janet. Thank you so much. Thanks for continuing to carry this program. I can't tell you how I appreciate it very much, very much.
Well, you know, when Kathy talked me into going live with you the last time we did, she said, Janet, don't worry about the kids are all watching TV at 8 o'clock at night in Minneapolis. And I said, Kathy, you are so right. Let's go live with Mike. It's just the best thing we can do in the evening to get the truth delivered to people in Minnesota. So thanks so much, Mike, and happy birthday.
Well, thanks.
And we're up in... Yeah.
Tell me, give me, from your point of view, what is going to happen in Minnesota with this shutdown?
Well, we're really worried. I don't know if you know, but my husband, Bill Luther, he used to be like assistant majority leader in the Senate for 18 years.
Right.
We talk about this constantly, and he's really, really worried. We you know, the Republicans here cannot afford to back down because of all the corporate money controlling everything that happens now with the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Every Republican knows that if they back down, if they're the one Republican that cracks, Target, Best Buy, 3M, those corporations that contributed against our governor,
right,
they're going to take them out of office. It happened a few years ago to like a few Republicans who crossed the line to get a transportation bill passed after we had vetoed it for many years, you know, and our bridge fell down.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
they crossed the line. They lost their elections. Republicans use the money to take them out. So these Republicans are so beholden to corporate money, they can't back down, and Dayton can't back down, so I don't know what's going to happen.
And there's no chance of a compromise. When I say compromise, I don't expect Governor Dayton to compromise because he's not asking for anything that is outrageous or that could be considered impractical, whereas the Republicans are. So if there's any compromise, I mean, this is astonishing to me. It's not just in Minnesota, as you well know. It's in several states across the nation and on the federal level. And I have a feeling that what happens in Minnesota is going to be watched very closely by the Republicans in Washington, and or vice versa. And it's just getting weird. It's getting very scary. And I don't think it's going to take too much, Janet, before the people in this country are going to say we've had enough.
Well, I hope so. Bill and I are very frightened for the future of this country, as you are. We are very frightened because with corporations running our country now, with all the money they've got to spend, how can we fight back against that? Because they just lie and lie and lie. And when you can lie and it's okay and the Supreme Court allows you to lie, how can anybody win against all that money and all those lies?
I hear you.
Well, thanks, Mike.
All right. Well, no. Thank you, Janet. Thanks very much. And I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Okay. My best to Bill.
Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. Janet Robert, who is the owner of KTNF, our affiliate in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Bless her heart. What a nice family. I spent some time with them. When was it, Kathy? Went up there for the Blue State Bash a year and a half ago. I think it was about a year and a half ago. And one of our partner, our business affiliate, Ron Hartenbaum, was there too. Nice people indeed. Nora is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Nora.
Hey there, Michael. That was great to hear Janet Robert on there.
Yeah.
I happened to look up on the internet because you were saying you didn't think they ran for office, and I was like, didn't he used to be a congressman? Here's what it was.
Right. Well, what I meant was, yeah, I just meant recently. They're not, I mean, they're in it not for the...
No, but I found out something really, really interesting.
Well, what's that?
When he quit the 6th District, which is now Michelle Bachmann's, in 2002, Janet Robert herself ran. And then she lost by 60,000 to Mark Kennedy, who kept it for two terms, and then he dropped it to go try to run for Senate against Amy Klobuchar, which he couldn't do. And right. That's when Michelle Bachmann got in against Patty Wetterling. But that brings me to the subject that I wanted to take up with you.
Okay. Go ahead.
Are you still there?
Yeah, well, yes, of course I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay, well, you know how you've been freaking out about Michelle Bachmann? I just have to say, for the benefit of Minnesota, we really need her to stay on this presidential path for quite a while and completely let go of her precious, the 6th District. So kind of play along with her on that if you can. For the benefit of Minnesota, because we are here on the very front line of this battle. And when I heard Mark Dayton talk today, are you still there?
Yes.
When I heard his speech today, guess what? There was two other guys up there talking with him, and it was Senator Hubert Humphrey and Senator Paul Wellstone. And they're all up there with him, standing strong. Their spirit is alive and well in our state capitol governor's office. And everywhere I go, everyone says how proud we are and how happy we are that we won our election by 8,000 votes and got our Governor Dayton because he's got our back.
Well, I hope so, Nora. I not only have your back, I hope he can prevail against these Republican thugs. I really do. Thanks, Nora. I appreciate you checking in. Victor is in North Carolina. Hello, Victor.
Hey, Mike. I just wanted to call and wish you a happy birthday from Elaine and I.
Well, thank you very much. How you doing? Victor Lopez here was the guy that we met, oh, my God, 10 years ago when he was in jail in Miami Detention Center, and then he was sent to the islands, and We mentioned him, and he got pen pals, and now he won the Nation Young College Student Writing Award a couple years ago. You know, every time I think of your story, Victor, I'm just, you know, I just say, my God, you know, this guy's really, how you doing? Everything going okay?
I'm doing good. You know, I had a few bumps and bruises, but I have a year left of college. I'm doing summer school now. And I'm still writing for the paper, the student paper.
Great.
Starting to look back at some of my old writing, Mike, and think, wow.
We all do that. I look at some of the stuff I wrote 20 years ago, and I want to burn it.
Yeah, and I always feel lucky because I have, you know, you to call if I have. But I just wanted to really, I wish you a happy birthday, and Elaine wanted me to tell you as well a happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Victor, that's real nice. How is your mom? How's she doing?
She's been great. She just works a lot, but she's doing good. She deals with me, so she has to be. Somewhat well, but I'm doing pretty good. I have a year left of school, Mike, and then I'm going on to law school. I'm going to try to do civil rights, international law, and shove it back at them. So that's my
good for you, Victor Lopez. Thanks, Victor. Thanks for checking in.
Thanks
for the birthday wishes. I appreciate it, pal. Take care. Yeah, there's a story with Victor. There sure is, man. That goes back to what IE America days, Kathy. I mean, that goes back. 10 years ago, 11 years ago. What a path he's traveled. Good on him, too. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. And when after the next break, we're going to do podcast trivia. Not this break. After the next break, the bottom of the hour, podcast trivia. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Giovanna. She says, happy birthday, Mike. Thank you for all you do and for helping us two seekers spend an evening around the campfire. You make the fire, we'll keep it lit. May we all celebrate many birthdays. Love, Giovanna. It's very sweet. And thank you for the sponsorship, Giovanna. Appreciate it. Very much. From Jean in Minneapolis. Somebody told me how X-A-N is pronounced, and I forgot, and I apologize. But Jean writes, hey, Mike, as you probably know, our state government is shut down. He's writing from Minneapolis. Because of, well, you know why. I only write to pass on my note. The one I sent to the governor and encourage your listeners, especially but not solely those in Minnesota, to take the time and send a quick note of encouragement to Governor Dayton. Our governor is exhibiting the qualities that I believe we all would have wanted to see in President Obama, but for whatever reason seem to be lacking. So I include the text of my letter only to demonstrate how easy it is. Let us all take a few minutes to show our support for the principles we long to see when someone actually has the courage to follow them. In these times, we need more like Governor Mark Dayton. Here's what he wrote. Governor Dayton, I'm feeling very fortunate to have a governor with a backbone, so I'm simply writing to say thank you for standing firm on a reasonable principle. Sadly, it is rare that someone in the position of authority that you as governor are in actually stands up to this cabal of ideologues that is infecting the entire world, whose whole purpose in life seems to be dismantling government and the protections it provides to the average person. It is equally sad that a group of legislators put more weight in their written pledge to a small group representing special interests than to their pledge and duty as representatives of the people. Actually, it is more than sad, it's reprehensible. Thank you, Governor Dayton, for honoring that commitment to the people and the state. I stand behind you. Regards. In his name. And then he finishes, that wasn't so hard, was it? Thanks, Mike, and thanks to everyone for showing support to our governor here in Minnesota. John? Is it John? I get lost sometimes in pronunciations. I really do. Anyway, thanks for writing, Sean. And this is from Kate. I always refer to as Kate in the desert, but she's in the Great Plains now, working, taking veterans to treatment centers. You know, it's... she drives them. She takes care of them, one after the other, sometimes driving 3 and 4 hours to get them to a medical treatment center and then 3 or 4 hours back from whatever facility that they're in, the Veterans Hospital, and she'll take them for treatment. And Kate writes, regarding Minnesota, Mike, all the folks who live in public campgrounds, who are homeless, who have moved north from the desert heat for the summer, those folks who have just enough money to pay the park fees, and the Minnesotans who have lost all their benefits. These are people who will suffer also. The subculture out there on the road will suffer the most. The Walmart parking lots are already full with travelers and the homeless. Oh, my. I speak from experience regarding closure of parks. Kate. When Kate first started writing to us, I referred to her as Kate in the desert because she said she lived in a lean-to between two cactuses. And then she went south after Katrina to help mostly older people with recovery, working her ass off to do the kinds of jobs that most people just simply won't do. It's a pretty amazing story. We met her here. Kathy and Molly and I met her. Molly was pretty young. I think Molly was only about, what was she, Kathy, about 3 when Kate came through. I was giving an address to the American Atheist Association at Emory University, and Kate happened to be under travelers. She was going a little bit north of here. So she swooped down into Atlanta, and we met her at Emory, and well, I gave my little talk. She and Kathy and Molly sat off to the side. I think Molly still thinks she's a fairy godmother of some sort. I really do. Well, I don't know that Molly remembers her because Molly was so young, but for weeks afterwards, you know, she kept saying, "Who was that lady? Who was that lady? Who was that daddy?" You know, that kind of thing. You know how your kid talks to you and you go, "Oh my God, do I love this child or what?" Anyway, Kate has spent enough time on the road to know about what it's like living in public parks and what happens when they say, "All right, move on. You got to get out of here. The Republicans have decided you can't sleep, you can't camp, and you can't park." Whew. How long, folks? How long before we say that's enough? We'll be right back. Stay with us. When we come back, podcast trivia, we'll just try it with the people that we have on the line. So Kathy will pick up the phone and ask you if you want to play. So stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Having it in a world gone mad, it's hard to think right. So much violence and it's fine.
down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
25 before the hour. It's pronounced Zan. Thank you, Zan. From David in St. Paul. Mike, thanks so much for covering the Minnesota government shutdown. I was one of the citizens protesting outside the Capitol to show support for Governor Dayton, not backing down to the neocons. There was not one teabagger or GOP-er with or against us, because they're a bunch of cowards. Governor Dayton is the only reason that we don't have the same situation that they're going through in Wisconsin, Indiana, Florida, etc. Thanks again, David. Thank you. All right, do you have the music? Let's play that music. Oh, yeah. By the way, this hour is sponsored by Giovanna, who writes, happy birthday, Mike. Thanks for all you do and for helping us truth seekers spend an evening around the campfire. You make the fire. We'll keep it lit. May we all celebrate many birthdays. Love, Giovanna. Woo! All right, podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to Molloy Program Downloads. Commercial free in your email every morning, even on the nights where we're not here. I don't know how that works, but by God, it works. All you have to do is get the right answer. It looks like Jeff in San Francisco, listening to Green 960. Are you ready to play, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, man, here we go. All right, now I will give you the questions. It's multiple choice. You pick the right answer, okay?
Got it.
Here we go. During the past several weeks, Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann made a series of statements showing she's not qualified to teach kindergarten, much less run for president of the United States. Which of the following did she not say? The one here that she did not say. A, the movie The Lion King was in fact gay propaganda. B, the brain-dead Terry Schiavo was in fact healthy. C, carbon dioxide is a harmless gas, has nothing to do with climate change. D, God told her to run for the U.S. presidency. And E, little pink snakes dressed in hula skirts are following me and reporting back to President Obama. Which one did she not say, Jeff?
E.
E. You're absolutely right.
The rest of those are true.
Although you never know, she may wind up saying that. But anyway, all right, Jeff, you won. Before we hang out,
did you hear about our favorite twerp, Mike?
No, who?
And Eric Cantor.
What'd he do?
He's putting bets that the U.S. loses.
Oh, yeah. He's bought $15,000 worth of hedges against the U.S. bonds so that when we go belly up, he'll make some money. Yeah.
All right, well, good. Thanks a lot. Okay, appreciate
it. Now, don't hang up.
Okay, great.
Because Kathy will get the information. Now, you wanted to talk about your health care premiums, right?
Well, I did. I got my check. I'm a teacher in San Francisco, and I get my... They change it every June when you find out, you know, if your premium goes up, you know. Because
right.
It's gone up $150 every year for 3 years. And then I got it, and I said, oh, wow, it went down from $945 for the three of us to $888.
So I was very excited. Is that a month?
But actually, they're paying us on 12 checks now, so it actually did go up, but not as much. I'm getting gouged, but not as bad.
Well, no, wait, so, is that a month?
Yes.
And that's out of your pension?
No, that's out of my paycheck.
Oh, your paycheck. And your
my health check,
your
health care,
your company health care. They're charging about $1,000 a month.
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
I was paying about $250 in '02.
In '02,
three of us.
And now it's yeah. Well, we've gone through a similar situation. I think ours is pretty close to that amount. And at one time, my health care for me was free. And for Kathy and Molly, I think it was another, $600 a year or something. And now it's up around $12,000 a year. So I hear you, Jeff. All right. Listen, man, hold on. Okay.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Okay. Hold on. Don't go away. Kathy will get the information. Congratulations. Zan. All right, Zan, the next time I'll remember. Um, Sanchez is in East L.A. Hello, Sanchez.
Zen, X-Y-Z. That's how you remember that one.
X-Y-Z?
Yeah, Zen, X-Y-Z. Just remember X and then Y-Z, and that's how you pronounce the Zen. X-A-N? Isn't that his name?
Yeah, what are you saying X-Y-Z for?
Oh, just so you know that the Z, Zen.
Oh, okay.
You see, that's your mnemonic device.
You just made it harder.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here you are another year older, and I'm calling to help things out, and I'm actually making it more complicated.
Another year older and deeper in debt. I know, just like the old Ernie Ford song, right? You remember that?
Yeah.
No, you're not that old.
No, 16 tons. I remember. I have that on vinyl.
Oh, my God.
Dude, I'm 54 years old, man, so I remember that stuff.
Oh.
I think I even might have that on 78.
That's how
far I go back.
Yeah, so, well, I guess you are old. Okay, you're calling about Israel, the blockade, Gaza thing?
Yes, first of all, I do want to extend my personal best wishes and a happy birthday to you. Honestly,
thanks.
Yes, you are one of my personal inspirations. I know that sounds cheesy to say, but you are one of my personal inspirations, and I just wanted to wish you the best happy birthday. And speaking of keeping it lit, how many candles are on the cake? Are we telling?
Get real.
Oh, okay.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I know. Well, you look good whatever ages. But anyway, getting to the Israel-Gaza flotilla blockade, the Greek authorities got in on the international fiasco today by actually sending the Greek Coast Guard with commandos who boarded the U.S. Ship, which is called, of all things, Audacity of Hope, as well as the second ship. And they're now preventing any of the Gaza flotilla. They're only carrying humanitarian supplies. These ships have been searched, and they've been approved already. So, Mike, what is the big deal here? It's humanitarian aid.
Well, the weird thing, I read that report in the Christian Science Monitor website that the 30 miles out of Athens, armed Greek commandos boarded the ship and turned it back. The 50 people on that boat, they're only carrying letters. It's my understanding, letters of support. Among them, Pulitzer Prize winning author Alice Walker is there, and an 85-year-old Holocaust survivor, Hedy Epstein.
Yeah.
The boat is being detained at a Greek Coast Guard port. I don't know how, I don't understand this. I mean, back in the day, who was it? Was it Jefferson that sent the U.S. Marines in 1790 off the coast of Tripoli to get the Barbary pilots to blow them out of the water because they were interfering with American ships? Don't we have about a 300-year history of saying to people who board American ships, we will kill you. I mean, you can't do this. We will shoot you down. Now, granted, nobody on that boat is armed. And it's my understanding, Stephen Zunes, writing in Foreign Policy, said that the Obama administration appears to have given a green light to an Israeli attack on an unarmed flotilla carrying peace and human rights activists, including the vessel with 50 Americans on board.
Yep.
So apparently the Greeks did the dirty work, the Greek Navy. I don't understand what's going on. I have no idea.
Well, you were aware that a couple of days ago, one of the ships, was deliberately sabotaged. Now, the activists are all pointing to Israel and possibly Mossad as the agents who sabotaged. They actually scuba dove under the ship and deliberately sabotaged the propeller. And if the propeller would have broken off, the shaft itself would have gone inside the ship, and it would have caused so much damage that it would have deliberately sunk the boat. I mean, this is how savage these people are getting. I mean, what is the big deal? And I honestly, Mike, I know this is not the Israeli people, and I'm not trying to speak out against them. I know this is their government, just like it's our government. But this is humanitarian aid we're talking about here, for God's sakes.
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? But
yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, Sanchez, I first of all don't understand how this can be allowed, where boats can be boarded on the high seas, and unless 30 miles from Athens is within Greek territorial water, but these boats were sailing away from Athens. They were not sailing to Athens. They were sailing to, not to Israel. They were sailing to Gaza, which is not part of Israel. This is madness. As a matter of fact, next hour, I'm going to, like I said, Stephen Zoom is writing Foreign Policy. There's some things he wrote that I want to share with everybody. So, we'll get to that. Sanchez, thanks a lot, man, all right?
Happy birthday, man. Love to you guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll be right back. Before the hour. Brad Friedman is calling from L.A., who substitutes for us quite regularly. Hey, Brad.
Hey, boss. Wanted to call and tell you happy birthday, my friend.
What are you talking to me on?
Does it sound no good?
It sounds awful. It sounds like we're talking on tin cans in a long string.
Blame Steve Jobs. It's an iPhone.
Oh, is it? Oh, my God. Oh, now you sound better. Yeah. It must have been a bad sell, huh? So
No doubt.
You're just calling to wish me a happy 35th birthday, huh?
I am. 35 yet again this year. Well done.
Yet again. Yes, indeed.
I am. We were driving out to the drive-in tonight, and heard that it was your birthday.
Wait! You have drive-ins in L.A.?
We do. Just a few left, but this is a good one. It's got four different screens with two movies on each screen, if you can believe it.
How do you watch two movies? You mean a double feature?
What double feature? Yeah.
Well, we still have one. We still have one legitimate drive-in in Metro Atlanta. 5 million people in one drive-in, and it's a lot of fun. They have first run of flicks, so it's fun to go.
Yeah, we were going to see Transformers and Super 8, but they played a trick on us by telling us they're going to play Transformers twice in a row. So we bailed out, and we're going to the other screen to see Green Lantern and Kung Fu Panda 2. It's remarkable how much lower the bar is for what movies you will see when you're going to the drive-in.
Going to a drive-in, right. Well, let me suggest that it's probably not a good idea to go see Tree of Life that I saw this past weekend. Kathy and Molly were in Denver, and I went to see it by myself. Be careful if you go see Tree of Life.
I heard you talking about that the other night, and no, that one won't make it to the drive-in, I'm afraid.
No, I don't.
Probably
I don't,
a good thing.
I don't think that'll make the drive-in. But if you do go see it, just prepare yourself to be very disoriented when you walk out. It's really a stunner. I mean, it is absolutely a stunner.
Will I be depressed when I walk out?
I was for a while, but only not because so much of the film, but because of how the film affected my personal views about several different subjects. I mean, it'll lash you on on several issues if you have had a life that has been interesting, shall we say. It hits you on several issues, several levels. But it's really one of the best movies I think I've seen in a long time. I believe when you go to see a film, it ought to do something to you other than just, stun you. I love special effects. And this one has some. This one has some special effects. They're right up there with, 2001 Space Odyssey. But, it just totally disorients you, I think. It did me. And I think that's the object of good art, to move you off of wherever you are when you see it or listen to it or watch it. You know, that's one of the indications of good art. It moves you. It changes your perception.
Are you saying Kung Fu Panda 2 is not going to do that for me tonight?
Kung Fu Panda 2. Are you seeing it in 3D?
It's the drive-in. They don't have 3D here. Are you kidding?
They don't have 3D drive-ins? Oh, my God. Where do you live, boy?
No, I know. A cheap drive-in, huh?
Right.
We'll be lucky if we can pick up the audio here.
That's the way they do it through your radio now, you know?
Yeah, they do it through the radio if the battery on my car doesn't run out. But, you know, we just like to get the hell out. After a week like this, with the guys like David Prosser, you know, punching babies in the face or whatever he's doing up there in Wisconsin.
Oh, my God.
And the Times lying again about Acorn and Andrew Breitbart. We said, you know, the hell with this. It's a holiday weekend. We're going to the drive-in.
There you go. It's a holiday weekend. We're going to roast hot dogs tomorrow.
That's it, baby.
We're not going to eat them because we know what's in them, but we're going to roast them anyway.
Well, you can't have Johnsonville sausages, apparently, because apparently they're a big Scott Walker supporters up there in Wisconsin. So I've been warned.
I'd be reluctant, no matter who owned them, to eat a hot dog named Johnsonville. I'd be a little not willing to do that. Hey, listen, Brad, have a good evening, all right?
Thank you, my friend. Happy birthday, brother.
Kung Fu Panda 2. Thank you, Brad. Thank you very much. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Johnsonville hot dogs? I think not. Steven is in Burbank. Hello, Steven.
Hi, Mike. I say happy birthday anniversary. Your real birthday happened years ago.
Oh, my God.
This is just an anniversary.
A birthday purist.
For sure. In more ways than one.
Yeah, there you go. What's up, pal?
Well, what it is, you know, most of why I call is for the right wingers, more or less, and wondering what they would think if they go to their local city park and find, like, a chain link fence with barbed wire and they have to pay, like, $10 or $15 just to get in and have a little picnic. What are they going to think about that? And the electric companies, Enron coming back in.
I don't think hey, listen, let me put you on hold, all right?
Okay, boss.
All right, stay there. We have to do a break here at the top of the hour. And then I'll come back and we'll talk. This hour, by the way, has been sponsored by Giovanna. She writes, happy birthday, Mike. Thank you for all you do and for helping us two seekers spend an evening around the campfire. You make the fire, we'll keep it lit. May we all celebrate many birthdays. Love, Giovanna. That's very sweet, Giovanna. Thank you. And Giovanna is sponsoring the next hour, too. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. just 7 past the hour. Guess who's sponsoring this hour? Giovanna. And this message is, birthday wishes to you, Mike, our guiding light and a voice of freedom, love, and many, many more, Giovanna. Thank you, Giovanna. It's very sweet. All 3 hours, like ducking over last night. Wow, I'm very thankful. Steven's still holding on to Burbank. I bet your ear's all sweaty now, right?
Oh, yes. How'd you guess? Only a human being, just like you.
That's true. Okay, where were we?
Well, the call was about what the teabaggers would think about having to pay money for everything, everywhere they go. They have to pay money, the toll road. They have to pay money to the city park. They have to pay money with no guarantee that they will be allowed to have that money. You know, no guarantee of job security, no guarantee of a decent standard of living, no guarantee that they'll be able to do anything that normal people would do. And to try to get them to think about it, you know, try to talk to them about it, they probably think, well, hey, that's a good thing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, like they say, like, you know, like when I was at the town hall, you know, during the health care with Adam Schiff. Yeah, in the 29th, and here's the teabagger with his big old American flag and his big old "Don't Tread on Me" flag and all that. And,
right.
And he's telling me I should go out and get a better job so that I could pay for that health care. And I'm thinking, well, gee whiz, what about the guy that takes my job? You mean the guy that drives a Tinker Toy around delivering Tinker Toys for other Tinker Toy maintenance? You know, should just not be allowed to get medical care. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the line of thinking. It freaks me out. It just totally freaks me out.
I don't know where that comes from. I guess a very damaged childhood or something. I mean, I don't know how people wind up thinking that way when they become adults.
Well, it's ingrained. It's some call it inculcated. Some call it enculturated. And I made mention of this before about the societal belief syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, how it's the mix and match, you know, and I throw that term around and the intelligentsia pats me on the head and says, yes, that's nice, dear, you know, and say, birds also fly, you know, and so gee whiz, of which I'm going to get to rub elbows with some this coming weekend.
Why? What are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. It's a toss-up. I either go to a picnic in Griffith Park or I go to a march in South Pasadena. And I'm waiting for the information about the march in South Pasadena.
What's the march about?
The usual anti-war and social justice. And
Sanchez going with you?
I don't know. I don't know where he's going to be.
Yeah.
But if he sees me at the march, then he'll probably go to the picnic. If he sees me at the picnic, he'll go to the march. Because it's my job to make his life miserable. Somebody has to do it.
So it's tough work. Somebody has to do it. I hear you. All right, Stephen. Whatever you do, have fun, all right?
Okay, Tree of Life, one more thing, boss.
Yeah?
I read the book review in The Nation, and it said it would make an atheist cry.
You mean the film review?
Yeah, in The Nation.
And it said it would make an atheist cry.
It would make an atheist cry. Does this mean that they're going to prove that sub-quantum mechanics has some kind of serotonin flowing into neurons and synapses? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, you're going too deep there for me. But I'll tell you what, I'm a full-blown Bible-believing atheist, and it didn't make me cry, not that part of it, but it was pretty profound the way the issue of
existence.
Existence, especially in its various possible forms and consciousnesses, were presented in that film. I'm telling you, it's just I've said the other night, I don't do movie reviews. I don't recommend movies. I really don't. But this one, I think it's worth seeing. It's just astonishing. It's just absolutely astonishing. And I think he's only made 6 films in 35 years. So, it's not like the director has, a million things to say. He has very little to say, but this one is astonishing. It's just astonishing. I think some people are going to go see it now and say, what the hell? What do you mean astonishing? That was nothing. There were some people that booed it when it won, when it was presented at Cannes. It won the Palme d'Or. It won the number one award at the Cannes Film Festival. And yet, I've read a review that said several, I think it was the New York Times, said several people when the film was over, you know, booed it. I don't know what the hell they were booing. Maybe because they just didn't understand it and there was nothing that leaped at them off the screen.
Well, when I first saw THX 1138 in one of the most conservative areas in the United States, the cowboys were booing and walking out thinking, what is this, THX 1138? Eyes were bulged, my jaw was hanging down on my knees, my eyes were bulged wide open.
Right.
Look at this. This is what says it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even to this day, I can still pick stuff out of it and say, gee whiz. You know?
Yeah, well, cowboys will do that sometimes.
Well, okay.
Hey, thanks, Stephen. Take care, all right?
Okay, boss.
All right, man. Talk to you later. Yeah, anybody... I don't care what your belief system is. If you are a devout Christian, evangelical Christian, you're probably not going to like it very much. I don't know about devout Muslims or Jews. I have no idea, but because I wasn't raised that way. I was supposed to be a devout evangelical Christian. But if you are disconnected from all of that fal-de-ral, if your brain has not been mushed around by religious indoctrination, I think you're going to find this film a real challenge to get a hold of. I'm still kind of stunned. I spent about two minutes trying to explain it to Kathy the other day, and because I went to see it by myself until I finally realized I can't. There's no way. She's going to have to see it herself. I don't know how anyone could review this film. I'm sure it can be done, but I don't know how. Ronnie, who's in the Army, sent me a link, and it said, what the F is this? Well, what it is, Ohio Republican Governor John Kasich yesterday signed into law a bill that allows gun owners in Ohio to carry concealed weapons into bars and other places where alcohol is served. And Ronnie said, what is this? I wrote back, said it's called Culling the Gene Pool. It was signed Thursday afternoon. Businesses can ban concealed weapons on their premises for safety reasons if they want to. And some, like the Cincinnati Bengals football team, have indicated they will continue to bar gun owners from bringing firearms into the stadium. The new law allows residents to carry concealed handguns into licensed establishments in the state, including shopping malls and sporting venues. You can now, a person with a concealed carry license can transport a loaded handgun in a motor vehicle without securing in a holster, case, bag, or box. Opponents of the law have said that mixing guns and alcohol would endanger public safety. Supporters argue that the laws bring Ohio into line with other states that have concealed carry rules. I say bring it on. Yeah, carry guns everywhere. You can, in Utah now, you can take them into churches, can't you? I mean, wherever. Churches, bars, kindergartens, public bathrooms. Yeah, everybody, get loaded up, man. Get your gun. Everybody get loaded. I cannot wait in Ohio. Look, I'm from Toledo. I know what's going to happen in Toledo. Somebody in Toledo... has been unemployed for 4 years and has a gun, is going to be drinking in a bar some night, and somebody is going to piss him off, and there is going to be blood, guts, and brains all over the inside of that bar. You know it's going to happen, and it's going to happen over and over again. And like I've said before, Republicans are just goddamn crazy. They are just totally, completely out of their minds.
Into the
bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Let me share this with you. Stephen Zunes, who is a columnist, senior analyst, professor of politics at University of San Francisco. He's also the chair of Middle Eastern Studies there. Author, you know who he is, Stephen Zunes, Z-U-N-E-S. I'm not going to do the whole thing here, but there's a bit in this that I want to share with you. He writes, the Obama administration appears to have given a green light to an Israeli attack on an unarmed flotilla carrying peace and human rights activists, including a vessel with 50 Americans on board, bound for the besieged Gaza Strip. At a press conference on June 24th, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton criticized the flotilla organized by the Free Gaza Campaign by saying, this is Hillary saying, quote, it would provoke actions by entering into Israeli waters and creating a situation in which the Israelis have the right to defend themselves, end quote. Clinton did not explain why a country had, quote, the right to defend themselves, end quote, against a ship that is clearly no threat. Not only have organizers of the flotilla gone to great steps to ensure there are no weapons on board, the only cargo bound for Gaza on the U.S. ship are letters of solidarity to the Palestinians who have suffered under devastating Israeli bombardments, a crippling blockade, and a right-wing Islamist government. Nor did Clinton explain why the State Department suddenly considers the Mediterranean Sea off the coast of the port of Gaza to be, quote, Israeli waters, end quote, when the entire international community recognizes Israeli territorial waters as being well to the northeast of the ship's intended route. The risk of an Israeli attack on the flotilla is real. Israeli commandos illegally assaulted a similar flotilla in international waters on May 31 of last year, killing 9 people on board one of the vessels, including Firkin Dogan, a 19-year-old U.S. citizen. Scores of others, including a number of Americans, were brutally beaten, and more than a dozen others were shot but survived their wounds. According to a U.N. investigation based on eyewitness testimony and analysis by a forensic pathologist and ballistic expert, Dogan, the American, was initially shot while filming the assault and then murdered while lying face down with a bullet shot at close range into the back of his head. The United States was the only one of the 47 members of the UN Human Rights Council to vote against the adoption of this report. The Obama administration never filed a complaint with the Israeli government, demonstrating its willingness to allow the armed forces of U.S. allies to murder U.S. citizens on the high seas. As indicated by Clinton's statement of last week, the administration appears to be willing to let it happen again. Last year, 329 out of 435 members of the U.S. House signed a letter that referred to Israel's attack that killed Dogan and the others as an act of, quote, self-defense, which they, quote, strongly support. A Senate letter signed by 87 out of 100 senators went on record, quote, fully supporting what it called, quote, Israel's right to self-defense, claiming that the effort to relieve critical shortages of food and medicine in the besieged Gaza Strip was simply part of a, quote, clever tactical and diplomatic ploy, end quote, by, quote, Israel's opponents to, quote, challenge its international understanding or its international standing, end quote. Earlier in the week, the State Department issued a public statement to discourage Americans from taking part in the second Gaza flotilla because they might be attacked by Israeli forces. Yet thus far, neither the State Department nor the White House has issued a public statement demanding that Israel not attack Americans legally traveling in international waters. Indeed, on Friday, today, State Department spokesperson Victoria Nuland implied that the United States would blame those taking part in the flotilla rather than the rightist Israeli government should anything happen to them. like those in the early 60s who claimed civil rights protesters were responsible for the attacks by white racist mobs because they had provoked them. Newland, the U.S. State Department spokesperson, said, quote, groups that seek to break Israel's maritime blockade of Gaza are taking irresponsible and provocative actions that risk the safety of their passengers, end quote. Again, the Obama administration didn't offer even one word encouraging caution or restraint by the Israeli government, nor did it mention that the International Red Cross and other advocates of international humanitarian law recognize that the Israeli blockade is illegal. More when we come back. This hour is sponsored by Giovanna. Birthday wishes to you, Mike. Our guiding light and a voice for freedom. Love and many, many more, Giovanna. Thanks, Giovanna. It's very kind. Back to this report by Stephen Zunes, writing in Foreign Policy in Focus. Passengers on this boat, the American boat with 50 people on it heading to Gaza, or it was heading to Gaza until the Greek military boarded the boat and in an act of piracy, forced the boat into a nearby military port. Passengers of the U.S. boat christened the Audacity of Hope include novelist Alice Walker, Holocaust survivor Hetty Epstein, former CIA analyst Ray McGovern, veteran Foreign Service officer and retired Lieutenant Colonel Anne Wright, Israeli-American linguistics professor Hagit Borer, and prominent peace and human rights activists like Medea Benjamin, Robert Nyman, Steve Fake, and Kathy Kelly. 10 other boats are carrying hundreds of other civilians from dozens of other countries, along with nearly 3,000 tons of aid. Those on board include members of national parliaments and other prominent political figures, writers, artists, clergy from various faith traditions, journalists, and athletes. 15 ships have previously sailed or attempted to sail to Gaza as part of the Free Gaza campaign. None was found to contain any weapons or materials that could be used for military purposes. The current flotilla organizers have stated that their cargoes are, quote, open to international inspection, end quote. Despite this, however, the Obama State Department insists that the Israelis have the right to intercept the ships due to the, quote, vital importance to Israel's security of ensuring that all cargo bound for Gaza is appropriately screened for illegal arms and dual-use materials, end quote. Though the flotilla organizers have made clear that the U.S. boat is only carrying letters of support for the people of Gaza, the State Department, our State Department, has also threatened participants with fines and incarceration if they attempt to provide, quote, material support or other resources to or for the benefit of a designated foreign terrorist organization such as Hamas, end quote. He writes more, and then he closes with, more significantly, the Obama administration's response may signal a return to the Reagan administration's policies of defending the killing of U.S. human rights workers in order to discourage grassroots acts of international solidarity, as when Reagan officials sought to blame the victims and exonerate the perpetrators for the murder of four American churchwomen by the El Salvadoran junta and the murder of American engineer Ben Linder by the Nicaraguan Contras. Perhaps the Obama administration hopes that giving a green light to an Israeli attack on the U.S. ship and other vessels in the flotilla will serve as a warning. Perhaps the Obama administration hopes that Americans volunteering for groups like Peace Brigade International, Witness for Peace, Nonviolent Peace Force, Christian Peacemaker Teams, International Solidarity Movement, and other groups operating in conflict zones like Mexico, Colombia, Guatemala, El Salvador, Sri Lanka, Palestine, Nepal, Indonesia, and elsewhere will think twice, knowing that the U.S. government will not live up to its obligations to try to protect nonviolent U.S. activists from violence perpetrated by allied governments. Indeed, nothing frightens a militaristic state more than the power of nonviolent action. Stephen Zunes, a columnist and senior analyst for Foreign Policy and Focus, he's also a professor of politics and chair of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. It's just incredible to me. What is it? I mean, I can understand the establishment of the state of Israel. I can understand why it was a driving force. Why the group that named itself Zionist, going back long before the establishment by UN mandate of the state of Israel, why it was necessary, why it was sought after. I think any people that have, for whatever reason, been driven or banned or left or moved away from or from what they consider to be their the place where they have their roots, why they want to return, especially if it involves religion. But at what cost? At what cost? Do you, Truth Seeker, have any idea, because I don't, how many Egyptians, Israelis, Palestinians, Syrians, Jordanians, Iraqis, Saudis, Kuwaitis, I mean, add your own list, how many of these people have died violently because of the one-sided policy that the U.S. backs in the Middle East? It's incredible. But the support, the unyielding support, the hypocritical support that comes out of the U.S. Congress, both the House and the Senate, and this administration, unending, it just never stops. Who speaks out for the people who are forced to live in an apartheid state as the Palestinians are? I mean, who speaks in the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate for these people? If you're a regular listener of this program, you know that this is an issue that I just can't let go of. I don't give it enough attention, and I give it as much attention as I'm able to stand. I used to do it more, especially back during the first Intifada, when the sight of children, and they are children, 8, 9, 12, 14, 16, 17, 18, throwing rocks at Israeli tanks and fully armed Israeli soldiers. And apparently there's a whole generation out here in the United States now who doesn't remember what happened in the mid-80s. You know, I guess it is entirely possible, and it happened, or not possible, but it is a given, it's a fact it's a given that official U.S. policy, I don't care what the administration says, I don't care what kind of half-assed, phony support, the attitude is that the Palestinian people are not human. And since they are not human, well, what else? I mean, why else would you deny people human rights? If they're not human, it's very easy. They have no political base. When George W. Bush insisted that the people of Gaza hold an election and they voted for the wrong leadership. Oh, my God. They voted in the wrong political party. There's so many people in Israel who are shamed by what is going on. There are so many peace activists in Israel who struggle every single day with this issue. I'm not saying all Israelis do, certainly not all American Jews do, although an enormous number of American Jews are fully aware of this issue and this horror that has been perpetrated for 50 years, 60 years against the people who call themselves Palestinians. You know, so every once in a while somebody write to me and say, well, there is no such thing as Palestine, you anti-Semite. You know, I just wish you people would stuff it, you know. I really don't care what you have to say. I also get emails from an awful lot of Americans who happen to be Jewish who are in complete support of human rights and dignity and a place to live and a safe, secure life for the Palestinians. It's just an issue. I've said it before. It will not go away, and apparently it will not be solved. And now this. The United States government warning Americans traveling in international waters on a peace mission that if they are attacked, the U.S. will not protect them. Son of a bitch. To you, Mike, our guiding light and a voice for freedom, love, and many, many more, Giovanna. Giovanna, thank you so much. 3 hours of sponsorship tonight was very, very appreciated. Yes, phone calls. Mark is in Montgomery, Illinois. Hello, Mark.
Mike,
yes.
I'm delighted again to speak with you, and many happy returns of the day.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I was telling Kathy that I just completed my poem about the bad woman of Minnesota, and I thought in honor of your birthday, I would recite it for you.
It's not real long, right?
No.
Okay, go ahead, Mark.
It's an illuminating poem
Okay. Entitled
A Dim Bulb in Search of Enlightenment. Pay no attention to what Michelle said. A shaman drilled Bachman a hole in the head. To envision her future in revelation, this moron risked having a delicate operation, a procedure known as trephination. The cranial assault caused synaptic tumult, a frontal lobotomy was the tragic result, though the retarding brain damage was not all her fault. The novice witch doctor took scalpel in hand and surgically severed her pineal gland. Well, she gave her mystical quest one hell of a try. And surely you've guessed he plucked out her mind's eye. The physician she chose was unschooled with a knife. So the numbskull arose a retooled Stepford wife.
All right, here, this is my response. That's what we used to do. Thanks, Mark. That was very gory, or very interesting.
Every fourth, Mike.
And you don't live in Minnesota, I take it.
No, I did at one time. I lived at Eden Prairie. But,
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Isn't that where Zimmerman is from?
Oh, it's been a long time since I lived up there.
No, where is Bob Dylan from? It wasn't Eden Prairie. Where was he from? Somewhere in Minnesota. Oh, well, listen, thank you, Mark. I appreciate the poem. And I think what you ought to do is send it to her. Send it to her campaign headquarters in Minneapolis or St. Paul, right? Hibbing, Minnesota was where Zimmerman was from. All right, thanks, Mark. Take care, okay?
You too.
All right, safe and happy fourth. Have fun. Susan is in Sunny Squim, Washington. Hello, Susan.
Hi, and happy birthday, Mike.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
You know, your talk about the blockade and Gaza really came home to me not too long ago when just a couple of weeks ago I was in Washington, D.C. and meeting up with an old friend, and we went through the Holocaust Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through the whole thing, and, you know, they showed every step of how Hitler convinced an entire nation to do what they ended up doing.
It's just absolutely horrifying place.
It was horrifying.
Very moving.
It was very moving. It was not gory at all. It was extremely moving,
right.
And we were very moved. But at the very end, there was a section, a special exhibit showing modern times, the kinds of things that are going on today. It showed Africa. It showed Bosnia. It showed some of the things, and we were shocked that there was nothing about the apartheid in Israel.
Mm.
How could they be so insensitive, be so sensitive about what happened in Germany all those years ago, and what has happened in Africa on the genocide in the Bosnia, and how the beginnings of this kind of thing start with the making apart, the separating, the putting a label on the arm, the making them different. In Israel, the people, the citizens there that are not Jewish have absolutely no rights. They can't join the army. They can't join any of the clubs. They are separated by walls. They can't. Palestine has absolutely no freedom whatsoever. It's total apartheid. And they don't seem to see it. The people in that museum aren't saying anything about it. How can they be that way?
I don't know.
Well, it was something we talked about for quite a while. My friend was grew up under Jim Crow and was very much a victim of prejudice, and it was a very sensitive subject. And we talked in great length about how could they be so blind.
Well, you know, Susan, not to trivialize anything, and not to trivialize what I'm about to say, but you know, I sometimes wonder if it is so easy for members of the American establishment, whether it is media or government, it is so easy for them to support the Israelis and to diminish the humanity of the Palestinians, because that is more or less exactly what we did in this country, what white people did in this country to indigenous tribes that lived here.
Bingo.
That had been here, as far as these tribes were concerned, they had been here forever. It was their homeland, and all of a sudden, here come a bunch of white-skinned people who take over. Now, you know, somebody can make the case that, you know, conquest is as conquest does, but on the other hand, are the conquerors not responsible for the well-being and the welfare and the safety. And I don't mean welfare in any term, any sense other than care, you know, making sure that the people who've just had their country expropriated by an invading force, don't the invaders have an obligation to make sure that those people are not reduced to living on reservations or Bantustans or what have you? It's just a weird, I can't even talk about it. Susan, there's the music. I got to get out of here. Thank you very much. I appreciate what you had to say. I'll see you Tuesday. We're off Monday, the 4th of July. We'll have a program, but it'll be pre-recorded. I'll see you then. Take care. Keep it lit. And you, Kevin Kenny, have a great weekend wherever you are.
Can you hear that?